to another interesting edition of Langtime Chat. We both thank you very much. And when I say we both, I mean on behalf of myself, David Peterson, and my good partner. Do you want to introduce yourself, or would you like me to introduce you?
I'm a little worried about you. This episode is going to take 20 minutes just to say who our guest is, who, you know, is waiting patiently. But yeah, I guess I'm the good partner. I'm Jesse.
And welcome to Miles! Woo!
Hey, hello!
Langtime Chat, episode 64, featuring the one and only Miles.
I was about to say better half, but I don't want to get too controversial. So I'll just say... The saucier half of Let's Have a Booba.
Indeed.
I don't know. You still may be controversial there. See, when you started with the better half, I thought you were going with like Miles and Remy. Oh. I didn't know you were.
I wouldn't do Remy dirty like that.
I didn't know you were dissing Jake. Goodness. I love you, Jake.
We know what's up. We know what's up with Remy. Yeah. Remy knows what's up with cottage cheese and fruit.
I have always been like so terrified of those like Chobani flips where it's the yogurt and then you have to just flop that like strawberry compote on it. I'm already gone from it.
Just fold it in.
Fold in the compo, David. Fold in the compo.
Oh, my goodness. So, let me just say, I am already very excited because I already see one sound change on the document I'm looking at. So, why don't you give us a full introduction to what we are about to see and hear?
Yeah, so... Oh, go ahead.
No, I just said end here because I keep forgetting this is a podcast, like an actual listen to it, no video podcast.
5 years of recording and David still doesn't understand the difference between a podcast and a live stream, but go on.
Yeah, so to start, I have had these Tiolu dialects for a long while and they have been pretty similar in in a lot of ways. In words, in how they kind of operate. And I kind of wanted there to be a little more robust distinction in that. So I kind of explained it a little bit in the doc. I have a little conventions here. So all the examples that I have, if you are following, if I use W, that's for the Western dialect. If I use E, that's for the Eastern dialect. PCH is a proto. OCH is kind of the point of divergence. I'll call it old Chilu. Kind of go from there.
Cool.
What kind of spurred this was kind of the upcoming Let's Have a Relay. So it is my turn to be the relay master. Ooh. So I was kind of like thinking about what would make a good torch. And shout out to your previous guest, Nemo, who came up with the idea of kind of something along the lines of like a queer mythology story.
Ooh.
So I took that a little bit and kind of made it into this kind of a love story, kind of this like these two humans or figures kind of meeting up and creating this kind of supernatural, deification of this flower that's native to the island and kind of how it gets used in sacrifices and kind of the religiosity of it. So when I was composing it, I usually start with the Western one first because it's just easier for me. I know how it works a little bit better. I didn't tell you that to the Eastern, but then I kind of highlighted different phrases where I'm like, huh, could that maybe be something I could change lexically? Could that be something I could change and have it be a cool idiom kind of going forward? And kind of like thinking about that as I was doing these torches, because thinking about like if they had two different starting materials with the same meaning, hopefully if I obscure kind of the actual meaning and kind of break it down at the lexical manner, there's some confusion, there's some loss of meaning, and at the end of it, we get some really cool differences.
Well, yeah, man, that's a really neat idea. So basically, one ring is going to have west, one is going to have east. That's a brilliant idea. I don't know if that has been done before, specifically, where it's like, that's really interesting. Where essentially, like, the two different rings start with two texts that are the same text, but two languages from the same family. That's a really neat idea. And if it hasn't been done, I'm kind of shocked and a little ashamed of our community as a whole. Thank you for bringing us out of the dark ages.
Yeah, I mean, look on the precipice for it. I'm kind of finishing and finalizing the torches now. So I don't want to kind of interrupt some current relays maybe potentially happening now. I'm not going to say anything, but I know once things kind of settle a little bit, maybe there's going to be a let's have a relay coming this year.
Ooh.
Nice.
By the way, just to back up a little bit, also wanted to do a quick shout out to, of course, the first ever story, which is, I guess it's not a creation myth, but it is definitely a queer love story. Gilgamesh. Love that.
Truly.
One of my favorites.
I know I've not read it in its full. Jesse, have you read it before?
No.
I don't think anybody's read it in its full for, centuries, but I've read it in as full a state as it was in at that time. I have heard there's been like more chapters have dropped. This is kind of like a fanfic at this point. But I've heard that they somehow found more tablets. And so when they eventually put out another translation, if they haven't already, I'd love to read that. But no, I have read the story as it in its full state in like the early 2000s, and I love this story. It's fantastic. I don't think that you can successfully convince me that it is not a queer love story. I don't think it can really be anything else. It doesn't make sense if it's not. But it's really gorgeous. I love it.
Maybe I might have to actually like delve more into it. I mean,
It's
delve like a ChatGPT, but kind of just explore that realm a little bit.
not super long. It's not super long. Depending on the translation, it's kind of an easy read. All right. If we keep talking about this, I'm just going to summarize it.
Okay, so, kind of put some things into context before we talk about the differences. I want to kind of talk about a little bit of the culture differences that kind of, I guess, caused that rift in the dialects, and then kind of some what is this? Oh, just some small diachronical things, I think. So I kind of model this after a really cool, like, kind of Pacific Northwest, oceanic, kind of cold, rainy. Imagine kind of like maybe Iceland, maybe like Ireland, but colder, more mountainous. I imagine it to be very lush and like kind of like ferny rainforest, if you will. The people on the western side are kind of very food-based or kind of more stationary. They make a lot of like doughs, and they cake a lot of dumplings, and there's like a lot more kind of I guess agriculturally based stuff kind of there. Versus kind of on the eastern side, they're really good at kind of saving things. So like fermentation, salting, that kind of vibe. So a lot of meat, a lot of like salt meat, a lot of seafood boils, a lot of kind of these like really vibrant, I think of it as kind of like those like forever pho broth that kind of just like boil on ad infinitum. They kind of like stir that up and kind of have a good mug of it for breakfast. And it's important to note that kind of a lot of trees over there are more on like the pine side. So it kind of just has this more like how do you phrase it? Like Douglas fir forest-esque vibe. Yeah, I don't know how to explain that, but I had this sort of like very distinct picture of it in my mind as I was kind of creating this story a little bit.
By the way, I just want to drop this in case people were unfamiliar. another name for what Miles is describing is called a hunter's stew. So look that up online. And basically, it's a stew where you put the broth in and you keep heating it literally forever. You keep adding stuff, you keep taking stuff out, but it's like it's in a ship of Theseus kind of way. It's the same soup for that exists for like 50, 60, 70 years. And this concept has captivated me ever since I've learned about it. And I really want to have one of these soups one day. A lot of the big ones ended up dying out recently, probably due to COVID. But like ones were like they had been going for like 70 some years, and that's a real shame. But, you know, someday.
I imagine just like the flavor that just built up through just chucking in all these like bits and bobs and just, I mean, but that's exactly kind of the vibe I'm going for.
Can you imagine saying like this is like I am eating the same stew that my great grandparents had, not the same kind, the same stew. It'd be incredible. Mm.
It's just like we're breathing in the same air as George Washington, but on a way more delicious scale.
All right.
So I think I split them up into, so I split them up into kind of five different stages of evolution. The second one is the more important one. Each one is like 3 to 5 sound changes. I just kind of wanted to have some sort of way to kind of discreetly measure the progression. So I kind of explain a little bit. The old stage is where the languages first start diverging. So I was kind of thinking about this. I really wanted to ensure that those grammaticalizations that were common in both of them still were retained. Yet if anything that had previously been grammaticalized or something that might have come up in the proto stage, I want to ensure that if it was an innovation that was at or before the old stage, it remained. And then anything that was kind of the newer morphology or the newer lexical stuff kind of going on, that would be kind of past that stage. Why is that blinking? Anyway, but that's kind of a little disclaimer. Oh my gosh, this is like, my job has made me very conscious of like headings and like accessibility and design stuff. So kind of live with the headings, I go like full gone with the 2.1.1 business. And now we can get started talking about the language. Go ahead, David.
It makes you look super professional.
Thank you.
The type of thing, just looking at your table of contents on the left, it's the type of thing I find very intimidating, where it's like, I just look at this and think, oh shit, I better bring my A game here. This is serious stuff.
Yeah. So the first one, I kind of separated my lexical differences into three sort of little sub-tiers. So the first one are things that have been suppleted, things that were derived differently, and then a cute little idiom that I found was very adorable, and I just wanted to share it. The first one, I kind of go through, this is the proto stage. So his hayuni upiichut kun tihi, which back in the day that meant my friend is sitting on the log.
Sure is.
Perfect. So as we move on a little bit to the old version, we have two quick questions.
Just to give us like a basic idea as we're watching and listening along. Basic word order for proto?
SVO all the way through.
SVO all the way through. How about adjectives and nouns or modifiers and nouns?
Nouns tend to precede their modifiers. It'll come to pass. Oh my God. It'll come to pass that, possessors will precede their possessed objects. I'm trying to think of anything else. Prepositions.
Okay. So
anything does come up. It's pointed out. Yeah.
Let's just looking at the proto one right now, just to give us an idea in mind. So we have, I'm going to do this like word by word rather than kind of like, you know, fluidly. Chis hayu ni upi ichut kuntihi. Chis is friend or my?
He is the first person pronoun singular.
Got it.
Caillou is to take at this stage.
Okay.
Is starting to evolve into something possessive. And ni is friend.
Oh, okay. So like his hayu ni, and so ni is friend. That's a great word for friend. Upi is sit.
Is sit.
Okay. I chut, is that like on or the equivalent?
Yeah, right now it means to stand, and yep. It's a locative.
Yep, and kuun ti, he is log.
Yes.
All
so
right.
This, he is the augmentative of branch.
Mm.
Nice.
Mm.
Kuun ti is branch, log is just big branch.
Thick stick, got it.
Uh-huh. Wrong time to take a drink, my friend.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, cool. But that's just good. That just gives us an idea now that we can appreciate the evolution.
Wonderful. So, as we move on to the evolution, two kind of grammatical things start happening. I'll point this one out here with hey you. So, this kind of his hayu becomes reduced to hey you and becomes this the inalienable possessive pronoun.
Nice.
And upi becomes now used as a perfective marker on the perfective aspect.
Ooh.
So we have upi, and that's just, I don't like when the grammaticalized things are like right next to each other. So I always want to kind of just like supplete that out somehow.
I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in English, we totally have it happen. So it's not in other languages, too. So it's not.
Yeah.
If you're listening along at home thinking, oh, my gosh, I can't do that. You totally can. It's your own aesthetic preferences.
Oh, you. So in other words, I'm not going to get any flack for saying something like, you know, I would have had to have been at the store.
What's wrong with that?
All right. High five. I would have had to have had been.
I would have had to have been?
I would have had to have had been.
Oh.
I mean, at some point your brain just goes, sure.
I mean, that's
getting on the string. Go for it.
That's what my brain says every time. Yeah, it's like, man, in order for me to have done that, I would have had to have had been, you know.
Anyway, but you don't have to go that far, David. You can just say like, I have had spaghetti, or, you know, like something like that. Or I had had spaghetti before I met you.
Mm-hmm.
You can I had.
I had had spaghetti before I met you, but then I had your spaghetti, and I realized I hadn't.
You know, you said spaghetti, and I'm not going to let that drop.
You spaghetti. Spaghetti is Jake as a noodle.
New nickname drop.
Oh, Spaghetti, we love you.
Okay. Anyway, that was just me saying because
sorry.
Like,
upi, yep.
It happens, mm-hmm. And
yep.
You know, go on.
So now we can get to the nice crunchy business of the differences.
Yeah.
So in the Western, we have heyu ni upi sang yi chu kuan jie shi. Which is my friend, well, now it's my friend sat on the log. Mm-hmm. And the word for, and the word for to wait, now is becoming the word for to sit.
Nice.
Sang. In the Eastern dialect, you'll kind of see that aspirated PH, the aspirated P became an H.
Love it.
So, hey, you, ni, u, hi, on, ya, cha, I, chu, which on ya is to put down, and then we have that reflexive marker, which is just the third person pronoun cha, which is to put down oneself, which is a little bit kind of in that idiom, but that is how you say my friend sat on the log.
Wow.
They put themselves down.
Also really cool, we have upi, which is both high tone in the Western, in the Eastern uhi. So not there's not just the, you know, P to, you know, P aspirated P to regular P or aspirated P to H. There's also a tone shift. Very cool.
Correct. So this, I believe that the aspiration difference caused this higher tone here, and then that pH just lanited prior to that going on there.
Love this.
And then no tone.
Love this.
This one's a little bit tougher because there's a lot of unreliable bolden, but I will help you on the way. So I think this is actually in the proto stage. I'll say this sentence, and then I'll kind of give you some lore. Mm-hmm. So this is the otter gathers or picks up the oysters.
Mm-hmm.
So my yeast mi ku 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 ku. So kind of parsing it out, it is otter gathers oysters, plural marker.
Yeah, yeah.
And did otter at all get inspired by Matthias's name?
Or Miles?
No, it's by my name.
It's yeah, your name, Miles. Okay.
It is the first time I kind of put like not only my own name, but like anybody's name in a calling of my own.
Wow.
You made a good choice. The otter is one of the best animals.
I absolutely agree.
Mm.
Mm. I've desperately been wanting to get at what is called the River Folk expansion for a game called Root. And you can play like as the otters. Otter like traders of the realm, and you can kind of like help your little friends out and such. And it's very adorable. The art is fantastic if you want to play. Nice. I love it.
Yeah.
We now evolve, and I'm going to introduce you to a new word here, which protoform I genuinely forget. But we have these two senses here. My yi me ku ho ku kuch, which is the same one as below, kind of still more evolved. My yi ta o ho ku kuch. A little bit of an adjective there, but this ta to is the root of to collect.
Nice.
Oh, okay. So then you just changed verbs, or are these just two different sentences? And then
these are two different sentences. So yeah, this then, is one got sentence it. Here. This is one sentence here.
Yeah, and then we're gonna see how this plays out. Perfect. Okay.
Bingo bongo. So in the Western Ilocki in both of them actually, this ta to remains the same meaning. It remains the kind of the collect. So my yi sat o hua hu ku is the otter collects oysters. In the Eastern, same deal, just some changes. My yi ho hu ku, and that's the same, the otter collects oysters. The meku is the one that's changing. Western, it now takes on more of that gathering meaning of kind of, it becomes a word to carry. So niyameku huahu ku, that comes the girl who carries oysters. Now we have in the Eastern, takes more of that picks up sort of thing. So it becomes niyameku cha ichu huahu ku, the girl stands by or the girl is standing up from the oysters.
Huh. Wow. How interesting. I'm naturally the West is always better than East, but I'm kind of digging this Eastern language. I like it.
Yeah, the Eastern's a vibe.
Mm-hmm. Man, I really want their soups. I've heard very good things about them.
But that ends the lexical portion of it. Now the kind of I think is a more kind of fun version as we move a little bit from like the very like one-to-one stuff to more, I guess, floppy, more pragmatical, more phrasal stuff. I think. Perfect. This actually has two little derivations, but one more importantly I want to come out. So in our proto language, we have Chia na ti kuch hak chawu sah si mu. I added some little parentheses there. Those haven't been developed yet in the language. So this would kind of be just this portion, the people hunting, drink, freshwater ripening. I added those things in parentheses kind of make a little bit make grammatical sense.
Okay.
And I think the development here is, yes, we have two developments. We have the first one, I'll kind of point out, no, I will say that. So we have this word hak, which is to beat or to hit repeatedly. That now becomes used as the iterative aspect. Yeah. So we'll kind of see the aspect system a little bit more in depth moving forward. But just note that the iterative marker specifically is discrete events happening again and again and again and again multiply. And then best part is we have our word for alcohol, which is ripened fresh water, kind of just sitting out there, letting it kind of get its sour goodness.
Oh,
once
boy.
We kind of move.
Sorry, just real quick. I see a sound change from proto to old, where we have si becoming sichi.
Yes.
Wow.
So what happens is I think long chi vowels kind of go, e goes to yi and u goes to wu before glottal sounds. And then all of those glottal approximate clusters just reduce.
Wow.
Down to happy. Yeah. Dory goodness.
By the way, I don't think we ever said the whole sentence. This is the people hunting or drinking freshwater ripening kind of, or basically the people hunting keep drinking alcohol.
And by saying the whole sentence, David means like the English part of it.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So we now kind of get that people hunting. We'll see that kind of say a little bit. Drink alcohol. Yummy. Love it. Delicious. This is where the fun comes in. So, as we kind of pointed out, Western tenses do things more with foodstuffs. They kind of have big, more feasts with fruits and like grains and potatoes and all that good business. Whereas the Eastern, as you said, they're going to bring those out during kind of high holidays and big like social events and start celebrating with it. And start kind of like drinking more and more and more and more. So in the Western dialect, we have this whole sentence now being sha na ti ku ha ni bu sa si chi moa hu, which is the hunters are celebrating with alcohol, where to eat over and over becomes that word to celebrate. In the East, we kind of have a very similar sentence, but sha na ti ku ha cha wu sa si chi mo hu, and it's the ha cha wu, which is to drink over and over again, that becomes the word for to celebrate.
Oh wow.
So to dip again and again into that broth.
So we have the eaty and drinky sides now.
We do have the eaty and drinky sides. It actually boils over, no pun intended, into kind of like how they say like how are you and hello. In the Western is like have you ate yet, and in the Eastern is have you drink.
Oh, nice. I like that.
Yeah.
This is good stuff.
I did put a little just a comparative form here to kind of show ha and its kind of derivational flavor. So ha sachi is to bite over and over again. Ha cha chi is same deal, just with a different tone and application. It means to bite over and over again, to chew or to gnaw.
Nice.
We kind of got to the si cha. Oh, I'll say this kind of after the two. So si cha, si cha. Yeah, ni. Chup hung chao si e mu. So the person teaching spins drinking freshwater ripening. We saw that freshwater ripening is alcohol. Chao is to drink. Hung is the frequentative marker. So just more kind of like habitual, happens often, used to. It come from the word to spin. And then that got grammaticalized in the old stage as si ya ne shu hong cha wu si chi mo hu. The person teaching often drinks alcohol. Nice. This is where the fun comes in.
Go ahead, Dave. I think those teachers, they need their breaks.
Yes, yes, we did. We needed them desperately. I remember saying the first thing, like, when I got, oh, how's a new job? Like, what do you like about it? And the first thing I said is, like, I can actually go to the bathroom and not worry about leaving 20 kids by themselves. Uh-huh. It is, like, freedom to use my bodily functions. I could not believe
it. Yeah, yeah.
Tell those students whenever they want to get up and use the bathroom, like, can I go to the use of bathrooms? Like, yeah. Can I?
Can I know my plight? Right. Know what I've been through. One thing I did want to say about this sha, kind of derivational morphine thing, whatever, is that it comes from the word for the person, which is xie ya. It got reduced into sha, and that became kind of the agentive marker. Mm-hmm. But also, it's the same root as the third person and the pronoun cha. So it's just this person getting reduced further and further down, just more and more.
Nice.
So if that teacher is often drinking alcohol, sha ne shu hong a nu si chi. She's getting covered with water. She's getting that steam kind of going. And that's how she. That's how she's getting drunk. I don't know why I made her, gender them as a woman, but so be it. There's no distinction. So in the Eastern, she doesn't get steamy. Sha ne shu hong cha wu su san. So su san used to be the word for to bend or to twist. That now becomes the word for to spin. So we have this kind of like serial verb, drink, spin, and they're just kind of floating down, I don't know what street, but it's not a straight one. They're just like, eh. And that's kind of the fun things of saying, like, it's intoxicated and that kind of vibe.
Nice. All right. This is good stuff. It's so interesting because it's like the languages are so close in many ways. But yet then you see these times where, first of all, there's lexical differences, but also, and then there's like minor phonological differences in terms of segments. Mm-hmm. But then the differences in tone, man, that'd trip people up too. That's incredible.
Yes.
Because it's like, if you look at the right or the wrong sentence, right, you might think, oh, wow, these dialects are basically indistinguishable, you know?
Mm-hmm. But then say it out loud.
It is amazing.
I love this. This is good stuff.
Yeah. Anu is the verb for to cover. It's also used prepositionally. It kind of is this kind of, if you start piling on this thing, that's the result of it. I don't know what you would call that, but if you kind of cover and put more water and water in, you're just putting that steam. Same thing with the bark. You're kind of putting the bark over your, I guess, residence, and that became the word for to protect. Hmm. This is the cute one. This is my cute little idiom. It is about these two parents. So, mehu. And that is the parents felt an attraction for one another, or they kind of like, in literal sense, it's their eyes are burning.
Aww.
And yeah, so it's their eye, plural, burn, reflexive for the eyes.
Mm.
And then a similar, which I think is even more cute, mehu cho u, oh, that's the, see, David, you were right. This is the wrong form.
Yeah, it should be HI with the IIS low tone.
Yeah, it should be.
All right.
So, I do it all the time. Mei hu chou wu hi guo yu bu hu gu mi sha guo da. And that is our, their hearts begin to thunder. And that's
That's
kind of like our kind of way of saying like they kind of like fell at love at first sight, I guess. Or they kind of just like had that eye connection, that spark.
That is incredibly evocative. Yeah, I love that. This is wonderful.
Yeah. So that is all the lexical stuff.
Cool.
So these are all set in stone. These are kind of golden. When it comes to the grammatical differences, I have one main easy one, and then kind of just some four like goals I maybe want to see where things are going.
Cool.
So this is the one that is now canon. This is already here. So this is a sentence in both dialects for I am sending a letter to your older sister. In the Western, it is he ye tlo ye ru fi di fi po yu ki ya ni ya. In the Eastern, ki i cho ye ru bi di sa po yu ki ya ni ya. So we kind of have these that just obliterate it going on in the Eastern. There are some tones going on, but we care about this fi and this sa. So, back in the old stage, the preposition mehi was used. This was a verb to help. It got grammaticalized specifically for ditransitive construction. That's the only place it ever got used. And after a while, let's just say the speakers prefer to use different words when they were speaking, i.e., I forgot this was how it was constructed. So it had there. So I began using fee for the Western, and that's the preposition toward. And just to kind of be like, oh, how fun to kind of implement something new and odd and interesting. The preposition sa is the benefactive for, so that kind of marks the more so the indirect objects, but there probably is some wiggle room in the Eastern realm.
I mean, seriously, just look at those Brits who I swear they're just doing it because they know it annoys us by continuing to say different to as opposed to different from or even different than. I mean,
Yeah.
different than is supposed to be the non-standard one. Different to. What are you doing? And they just decided to do that for no reason other than to make us upset. Jake will verify this.
Jake was part of the meeting to say what will upset David most and voted.
Correct.
Yeah. And so this is an easy one. Like I don't think that you need to have necessarily specified at the outset why this happened because it's so obvious that it could be either for or to, you know,
Most certainly.
depending on basically whether you're focusing on the transit or whether you're focusing on this is something for somebody else, you know?
Absolutely. Here we go into the world of the unknown. What could
Ooh.
happen? Here we go. So, here are my short-term plans. The first one with this beautiful, beautiful table.
Yes,
So
it
there
is.
currently exists a alienability distinction in the dialect. So we saw heyu before. We saw koyu before. So that's kind of when that hayu got merged onto there. The other marker is yang, and that's the inalienable. So kind of what I'm thinking is potentially losing more so one set of the pronouns. Keeping the animate, one dialect will probably keep something similar. which is just a plain animate inanimate. So I'm more thinking that the inanimate will be lost and we'll just kind of have this mid-animate be the new inanimate. And I'm sure you're thinking, Miles, what is the mid-animate?
Mm-hmm.
Great question. It is dead people. It is body parts. It is plants. It is funguses. It is like tubers, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
More so kind of plant and fungal. Inanimate is dead plants, dead animals, how else? Just rocks, water, general, inanimate.
Xbox, yeah.
Yeah, an Xbox, absolutely. Inanimate. So what also kind of motivates this is there's, of course, no possessive pronouns for inanimate arguments because they can't really inalienably possess things other than qualities that never kind of came up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that could be just one dialect, say. The other one is that we just completely say loving our yang. We only use that construction for nominal arguments. So it would be noun possessor, yang X, and that would be the something possesses the other thing. I'm trying to think of a good example from something up here. Kiai yang yeru fiti. So your sister has your sister's letter. And then only the possessive pronouns would be used kind of as the new way of marking nominal possession. So that would be kind of the distinction in the grammar.
And by you saying that, you mean like one branch will continue using the yang method, the other branch will not? Did I understand that correctly?
I believe so.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember what I wrote.
Let me put it this way, right? Because this is essentially just anytime you make any type of decision like this with a language, it's six of one, half dozen of another, right?
It is.
And so this pronoun chart is more powerful, right? It's more functional, and it's more to memorize. And so that's a pro and a con.
Absolutely.
You got it. Then there's a lot less to memorize, but it's also a lot less powerful. And so you have to resort to a multi-word construction, the yang construction. And a priori, there is no reason why you do one or the other. So you could partly do it in an arbitrary fashion. Or you could partly just say, let's stick a pin in this. We know what the options are going to look like. Let's see if one of these languages is like opting more in favor of multi-word expressions, pushing away from further inflections, because it's kind of like, it's not even necessarily the case that they need to go hand in hand. It's just that you see it a lot, like, you know, English reduced inflection everywhere, you know. And so it wasn't necessarily like, you know, oh, man, we're losing so many verbal inflections. Let's get rid of these noun inflections. It was more like this is kind of the direction of the language. Part of it was based on sound changes. A lot of the inflections were happening at the end of the words, and that's where we were losing a lot of sounds. So, you know, there it goes. But it's not necessarily that this one affects the other one. It's more like there is this hidden mentality that is driving the force of the language that says this thing is pushing away from more inflection and pushing towards more multi-word expressions. And it's one of the only things I found so beautiful about optimality theory is that it essentially posited this little omnipotent being that was behind every single language and was pushing it towards something. Each language had its own little god, like not even like a little god, more like when they make one of those animes where they say like this entire nation is going to be this character, you know. That's what optimality theory was.
Like trans man.
Yeah.
Well, and the charts even have that little pointy finger, like in the official publications. There's like a hand.
That's the hand
pointing out the optimal.
Yeah, and I think.
Oh, you're right. Uh-huh. You're so right, Jesse.
Yes, an actual hand pointing the way.
Yeah, and so it's like, and you know, I think once people started picking up on this vibe, and like talking about it. You know, Prince and Smolensky were like, "Oh, no! This isn't. You know, the language doesn't have a will. It's not doing this." And it's like, "But your fanfic says it does." And they're like, "No! But yeah, I think we lean heavy into that vibe. I love it.
Yeah, like kind of like to succinctly say, like language, at least for our like sense, has some sort of inertia to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's some sort of like decisions that make more sense if it's moving on towards that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I love this. Okay, cool.
Nice.
Wonderful. All right. So that was second one.
This short term is easy. So,
wow, no test mark. Even have a bullet.
Oh,
I see. Oh, I see. This should have been 2.2.1.1 and then 2. Yeah.
It should have been 2.1.1.1 and 2.2.1.2.
Oh, I see. Oh
my God, this is like the end of Clue with 1x1x1x1. Oh my goodness.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Love it.
So, no tense marking. How sad. How unnaturalistic. Your God. they make up for this in 6 aspects, 4 moods. Some of them are used a lot more frequently. Of course, our friend Whoopi is making a happy appearance here, most commonly used aspect in this language. Fei is the other kind of most commonly it's the optative marker, but it kind of behaves like a future tense-ish vibe. The one evolution that I think could kind of make a lot of sense for these languages is we have the frequentative honk. We have the iterative ha, and we have the semilfactive chahi, which we haven't seen yet. That's like kind of when they get distinction between the iterative, where we have these multiple discrete things kind of happening after another, versus the semilfactive, which is just one time after and no more. So a lot of kind of time distinctions kind of being conflated here. So my kind of idea is that as ha is already used pretty derivationally, then we could kind of say, hey, maybe this starts to kind of be, think this action is done a little bit more over and over than derivation of an aspect. Those two can kind of flop in. The honk kind of take one of the iterative domain when it kind of comes to the multiplicity of it, versus the semilfactive can kind of take the discretion of the actions and extend that further.
Well, this is also an opportunity to further build the character of these languages.
For have, sure.
You know, the one where we could call it the conservative one that retains the aspects or more of the aspects is also the one that retains the heavier pronoun chart. You know, in this case, it's not necessarily losing, you know, inflection, qua inflection, but
sure.
It is just losing distinctions, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And so that could be like a cool thing to tie those in.
I like that idea. I'm gonna pin that.
Nice.
Yeah, in a good way.
Mm.
Not like pop it with a pin, but like on the donkey.
Do you think that's why Eeyore has the tail that he does? Did the pin the donkey game precede Eeyore?
Or, the tail or the Eeyore inspired it, one of those.
Okay.
One of the two.
I'm looking this up. We should keep going.
Bad. Like Eeyore was abused story. Eeyore saw some stuff.
I always felt bad for Eeyore because anytime I saw his tail, I was like, doesn't that hurt? Doesn't it still hurt? As a young child.
Yeah.
1899.
Whoa, that is very, very close to Winnie the Pooh. Like, as in, I can't say for sure which one came first.
Eeyore or Winnie the Pooh?
As in Eeyore or Pin the Tail on the Donkey. Like, I want to say that Winnie the Pooh was 1908?
25.
No way!
First appeared in 1925.
Wow, I was way early. Okay, so yeah, Pin the Tail on the Donkey was a thing by then. 26 years old.
And turn of the century, like, revolution just kind of came out of fad, I guess, by that time.
Oh my gosh. The
old man in the fist, the kids playing Pin the Tail on the Donkey like they're like rebels.
I can just imagine old folks. The donkeys already have tails. I don't understand this game.
So the Disney Wiki does indicate that it may. The Disney version of Eeyore losing his tail and having it repinned may be a nod to the game. I don't know that Eeyore's tail in the books was pinned on. I'm trying to find that out. But, like, I also feel like this is really a huge sidestep from the language and our last, you know, run of the podcast here.
Okay, so let's put a pin in this donkey tail and move on.
Let's pin Eeyore's tail and talk about more about dialects.
So these are the lofty goals. These are the ones that are good to work towards, but they're not on the urgent. They're kind of like, oh, wouldn't this be nice? Okay. So the first one is what I'm been dreading the whole time is a spelling reform and a border kind of change. I have so badly been willing to digitize this font for so long. And I don't know why I have been putting it off. I feel like I'm like so close, but it's just that one extra hurdle in my life that I don't bother with. But it's currently written with an alphabet that has remained unchanged since the proto stage. And of course, things have shifted a lot. So just kind of thinking about how we could do some sort of nice little orthographic change and such as to make things streamlined, more one-to-one, I guess.
It's always an interesting question about when a people decide, you know what, this is kind of enough. This is just way, way different from what we're actually saying. We need to do something about this. And I think it would be a wonderful thing if each of these sister languages made a different choice.
That would be nice.
I know. Deep breath there, Miles. Deep breath. Yeah, especially with the tonal changes and things like that. Like, it does make sense that they would have some shifts, but I also 100% understand, you know, this being a back burner thing, as I have several orthographies on my back burner that maybe someday I'll think about.
I of course, like, I love, you know, I love writing systems and I love seeing what people do with it. And I personally, I love seeing one of two things. One, I love seeing those who happen to be very, very gifted at calligraphy and doing stuff on paper. And like the one I know who is the best is Barry Garcia. A lot of his stuff is done by hand and it's gorgeous. And then I also like to see somebody who really gets in there and does the font right, you know, works on their individual shapes and gets the, gets the whole thing looking nice to be typed. I really like that. And I feel like the latter, I know it takes a lot of work, but I think the latter is is more achievable than the former. Because at a certain point, like it just comes down to talent when it comes to hand lettering and things like that. And it's not something that gets easier with age. The font stuff, like, it's brain work. I swear it's brain work. It just takes patience and a little time working with it. You can get something that looks really nice.
Heck yeah. Heck yes. I had two thoughts that came up. I had two come up when this happened. Is that bless Jonathan's heart, because there is no way in hell ever have gotten Nasi Bomo's orthography done without them. So kudos to the font work that they do.
Yeah.
And second is that I probably realized that I don't want to make too much of a spelling reform, because I'm like, oh, I have to get my tattoo changed. Do I really want to do that? No.
Oh.
So let's
wait.
Let me put a bit in that.
You already have a tattoo in the orthography?
I do.
Have I seen this? Is this my mistake?
Maybe I'll reshare it, but yeah, it's about like a yearish old now.
So wait, is this post CopyCon?
And here comes the silence, as we all think.
Yes, it was post, because I got it in March of 2020, of the year
2024.
The following March. Yeah, thank you.
So, man, I haven't seen this in person.
No, you haven't.
Oh.
But it does. It's a big story, and kind of like with it, it's a whole like chess piece. So I kind of want to like, yeah.
All right.
But I will share it. It's very, very cool.
All right. Right on. Right on.
Yeah.
Love that.
Last little bit. Chialu is a very isolating language. The only affixes that are like really used derivationally. A lot of them are even like back formations. So it's very leery on affixation. Mm-hmm. The only one, I was gonna say something. Anyway, I forgot what I was gonna say. But kind of thinking about like, if we did want to agglutinate something, if did something wanted to like glom on, it's gonna be your BFF Ubi, because like it's just so frequently used. Oh, I remember. I think the other candidate that could be used for this is ku or ku in dialects. That's the plural marker. That's just a singular word. That even might be the one that gets affixed first. But I don't know. Like the isolating thing, it just works for this. It's very word order dependent. So there's not a lot of like marking that needs to be really done.
If it were to happen somewhere, it would be in the Eastern dialect, right? You already have uhi. So first of all, H is a weak fricative. Second of all, you got the low tone there. So that thing is like begging to get reduced. Like I could imagine just the entire second syllable dropping off, and it just becomes some suffix that's ooh. Maybe with a little fix it if it comes after too many vowels or something. And then that's also the one.
It would be a prefix though, right? Didn't it come?
It will be a prefix, yeah. So it could be either ooh or ooh, and kind of take this this falling tone with a W. Mm.
I was thinking
if it that, came like go ahead.
I was thinking of a crazy enclitic, but anyway. And then that's also the same language that dropped the coda for the plural.
Yeah, it did.
And so it's like, it feels like it's begging for it, you know?
Well, you could also do like an intermediary stage to see how you feel about it, where you introduce, where these parts start becoming phonologically dependent on each other, but they don't actually glom on in the sense that we think of, you know, like it's a prefix or a suffix. But where pronunciation is affected like how we did in Hauhof, or like in French, where it's like the S is produced at the end of a word if a vowel follows it, but if not, you never hear that S. But then it only happens in some words and not all of them, you know, only the frequent ones get it. So anyway, like having some sort of phonologically dependent thing happening where this little particle, which is reduced, is sometimes produced this way and sometimes affects maybe even the tone of the onset of the next word because there's a floating thing, you know? Yeah.
That's what I'm kind of thinking too, especially with like the Eastern being more tonally heavy. It has four versus two tones. Mm-hmm. So a lot of like tonal shenanigans could happen.
Yeah.
We haven't made a lot of the fact that tonal and total are very similar words.
Kind of like your spaghetti and spaghetti.
Yeah. Tonal carnage.
Just ruin them.
Yeah. But wow. This is such a cool project. And it's so much more disciplined than what I usually do on my own.
To think this all started because of a breakup. Ugh.
Yeah, and now we can see the two languages breaking up. but thankfully they're still their own people. That's nice. Indeed. That's nice. Though you have to decide which one is you, East or West, because obviously that's the team that we're on.
That is true. I mean, I've always been a West Side person.
Yeah, I know, me too.
That forever broth is throwing some shade
here. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. That is amazing.
Remy is one lucky rat.
Yes, they are. Oh, speaking of the devil, they just got cheese.
Oh.
Cheese.
Nice.
Well, my goodness, this is really good work. Thank you. And I am super impressed. Man. Yeah, I love this.
And David is intimidated by your headings. I see him staring at your table of contents over there.
Mm-hmm.
I love a good table of contents.
We're rolling up in the club. Jesse hits me. Stop staring at that table of contents.
Okay. Yeah, that's valid. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing this.
Of course.
Yeah. This is what you need to be able to get into a language. You really need to take some time with it and take a look at it. This is wonderful. And yeah, you're going to put this all in like essay format and write it up for Fiat Lingua. That's so cool of you.
Yeah.
David was.
I mean, like, yeah, like that. I was like, oh God, these like bare bone little things. Is this going to fly from my own like standards? I'm like, do not let perfect be the enemy of good or you will go insane. And I just like, you know what? I'm going to leave it.
That's right. You just live with it, because what you have is probably better than what you think you have most of the time. And I don't mean you specifically, I mean people in general.
Yes.
You know, and this is really wonderful. And I still would like to, it's always a hard thing to do if you can't do fonts specifically, but I would love to see a rundown of the writing system as well. I think that'd be really cool. And it's also, it's a fun idea to look at, script diversion as well, just like you're demonstrating here with spoken language. But it is a nice little opportunity to do something with a script where it's like it could go, you know, you could go really wild and have like two radically different writing systems that are nevertheless sprang from the same source, or, you know, a color British American thing, sure. Something very light. I could see it going either way with this one.
Yeah, some phonemes got obliterated.
Mm.
So there's some nice, like, rifers, some, like, shifts and such.
And no matter what, your tattoo will still be correct because somewhere there is a monk in a scriptorium still using the old script. You know, no matter what, it's there.
Oh, the Luddite of the society just not back down.
Drinking his tall glass of apple cider vinegar and radishes.
Got the kombucha and the forever broth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, though, before we close out, I also want to share a new creation that was a creation of Miles and mine that I think is brilliant, and I want us to finish it, and I want us to present it. We kind of just started combining numbers for West Coast times and East Coast times
I saw,
into single
yes.
numbers. And I think it's brilliant. I think we need to do
Yes.
it. I think that it would be a gift to Hollywood and New York, and because we are often trying to schedule meetings on West Coast time and East Coast time. And I like what we've come up with.
I do too.
It needs some pondering, maybe just slight refinement, but I want us to do this. I want us to get our names on it, and I want us to become famous for this. Like
Well,
to,
here's the thing, David.
yeah.
If we do this, it probably will come into the common vernacular before they make daylight savings permanent.
It's true.
My
That's
house has
true.
a point.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking, what would we call it? The Ronkerson numerals?
Oh, that sounds wonderful. That's gonna fly very well.
Ooh, I like this. Okay. All right. This is gonna happen.
I
Oh, yeah.
believe you.
All right. Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming here. Thank you for sharing. Look out, await breathlessly the PDF version of this that will be on Fiat Lingua. We're all super, super excited for it. All the pressure.
And
Oh.
in the meantime, thank you all for listening to this installment of Let's Have a Chat.
Let's
Think that
have a chat, volume one.
worked. Volume one, yes.
Amazing.
Slash Length Time Chat,
There we
episode
go.
64.
All right, stay grammar, everybody.
Bye, everybody.